Hello and welcome to the July 7th edition of Juno Afternoon on KTOO News. We've got a great show. We'll hear about United Way's community impact grants. We'll find out about what DOT is doing at their open house tomorrow at the Mendenhall Loop, about the Mendenhall Loop Road improvements. And then we'll find out about the upcoming Oyster Fest and also about efforts to increase voter turnout. All that and more. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A national organization is expanding its efforts to fill teacher shortages in South Dakota. Teach for America is now serving two more reservations in the state. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
According to Teach for America, two-thirds of Native American students living on reservations don't read at their grade levels. The group's website also points out fewer than 10% of Native Americans in South Dakota have earned bachelor's degrees. Teach for America is working to help close those gaps by expanding to two reservations. The organization is active on the Rosebud and Pine Ridge reservations in southern South Dakota. Members of the Standing Rock and Lower Brule tribes are now receiving services as well. Teach for America works to fill teacher vacancies in underserved areas and to narrow an achievement gap between white and Native American students. 10 years after beginning its work in South Dakota, there are almost 80 teachers in the program, with just under 20% Native American. After providing $250,000 matched by private funds in 2012 and 2013, the South Dakota legislature did not provide funding this year. Officials with Teach for America are currently working to secure private contributions. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbolt.
An arts and cultural center planned for the Lac des Flambeaux tribe in Wisconsin is getting a financial boost. WXPR's Natalie Jablonski has more.
The USDA has awarded the project almost $90,000 towards job training for the tribe's Living Arts and Cultural Center. The center is being planned to replace the Indian Bowl, a venue in downtown Lac des Flambeaux that's currently in disrepair. Jordan Brown is chair of the project's board of directors. She says the grant will lay the groundwork for staffing once the center is built.
The $88,000 grant that was awarded to our project is a train-the-trainer grant to train the board of directors and the executive director to train us staff so we can run a successful business operation for a successful cultural center.
She says the job training grant is expected to be implemented later this year. Brown envisions the Arts Center as a hub for the region's arts and culture that could host powwows, performances, and traditional craft classes.
We're really looking forward to getting our new Indian Bowl up and running, of course getting it built first, so we can start planning our program planning, and it'll be a really nice place for people to come to visit up north as a good tourist attraction like it once was back in the heyday in the 60s.
The group is looking to hire an executive director for the project. One of the tasks ahead is raising the rest of the necessary funds. So far, the group has netted almost $800,000 toward the $3.1 million price tag. For National Native News, I'm Natalie Jablonski in Rhinelander, Wisconsin.
The annual Native American Basketball Invitational wrapped up over the weekend in Phoenix, Arizona. It's known as the largest Native American basketball tournament in the nation. This year's winners included the Rockhawks of Montana taking the girls' gold bracket, while the Rez Runners from Florida clinched the gold for boys. Andrew Bowers is head coach for the Rez Runners. He says many of the boys that played have been with him since the eighth grade.
The furthest we've ever made it in this tournament is Elite Eight, so the guys came back. We had, you know, one motto, one game at a time until we got here. This is our goal, and it's nice to finally achieve it.
The event attracts more than 100 teams from across the U.S., Canada, and New Zealand. In Canada, the Indian Village at the Calgary Stampede opened last week. It's one of the attractions where Alberta First Nations offer visitors a glimpse of Native life with things like meat cutting, demonstrations, games, and arts and crafts. A Calgary Stampede Indian princess is also selected to serve as an ambassador. The 10-day stampede celebrates Western values and features music, rodeos, and other activities. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Not voting is not rebelling, it's surrendering. Your voice counts when you vote. First, you have to register. Find out more at nativevote.org. Brought to you by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation.
And by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It is 3:05 p.m. You are listening to Juno Afternoon live from Alaska's capital city. I'm Joan Partis. I'm your Monday host. Jeff Brown is in the studio with me. He's the producer and engineer of the show. And the weather, it says developing rain through the afternoon. Highs around 62. Light winds becoming southeast. Tonight, rain. Lows around 54. Tomorrow, rain. Tomorrow night, showers. And Wednesday, rain likely. And Wednesday night, rain likely. But we don't believe it. It was supposed to rain yesterday, and it was quite spectacular. Spectacular. Our first guest for today, which is July 7th, is Wayne Stevens. He's the executive director of United Way here in Juneau, and he's here to talk about the agency. Hi, Wayne. How are you?
Good afternoon. Another dust-free day in paradise.
Exactly. Not too bad, as they say. So let's talk a little bit about United Way, okay? I think most people are familiar with United Way, but let's...
Certainly.
I think we all have an understanding of what it is, but what does the organization do?
The organization is a convener, collaborator, coordinator, fundraiser for the social service agencies who are our partner agencies. And we have partner agencies in communities across Southeast. Our area of responsibility is from Haines to Ketchikan. So we have partners in Haines, Juneau, Sitka, Petersburg, and Ketchikan.
That's a far reach.
It is. And unfortunately, I don't get to drive there every weekend, so... Or every year, for that matter. So it's it makes it an interesting region to cover with two staff.
I bet. When you go to the United Way, like conferences and professional development, it's probably well, I have a little different area than most of you.
In many conversations, I was like, do you understand what the distances are here we're talking about? No.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's typical for all Alaskans as we go and meet with our national support teams. So here in Juneau, in Southeast, in your area, what are the services that you United Way provides?
Well, our primary is the fundraising through the fall campaign season. That's our primary, but we work very closely with organizations. We've been working on a project funded by CORE Alaska for the Learn United Reading Tutors Program, where we're working with the school district here in Juneau, connecting volunteer tutors to come in and work with kids K through second grade and help to build their reading skills to achieve the goal of all kids reading at grade level by third grade.
That sounds great. So if somebody's listening and they say, wow, that's fantastic, I want to volunteer, what do they do?
Get right on our website, UnitedWaySeak.org, and click on the great big orange volunteer button, and you can find the reading tutor program and get it filled out. We're 6 weeks away from school starting. Sorry, kids. and we'll be gearing up. We're in two schools now at Riverbend Elementary and Gastineau Elementary, and I believe this year we're hoping to add Harborview, pending sufficient volunteers to get there. So. And then we've been working with the food banks, food pantries, and trying to hold a conversation about hunger in Southeast, hunger in Juneau, and, you know, based on the poverty level, the need for food in our community. Just Juneau is about 600,000 pounds a year, and we hit maybe 225,000 pounds. And so what you see is a lot of people, a lot of churches and folks focus on one segment of that hunger. But if you think about the schools provide a hot lunch from September to May. So school's out, kids aren't hungry, or they're just hungrier. So we've been working, and we've got three, the food pantries are putting on three food programs, summer lunch, summer breakfast programs for kids in three different parts of town, Church of the Valley, Douglas United Methodist, and, of course, the third one escapes me right at the moment. But trying to broaden the understanding of the need for food and the challenges, you know, of food. I mean, if you go to school hungry, the last thing you're thinking about is you're reading. You're thinking about, man, am I hungry? So trying to make sure kids have a full stomach when they show up to do their learning and reading. And if kids can graduate from high school, they have a far better chance of success. And if they can't read, they can't graduate. So it all sort of starts early on, and we're trying to work with our partner agencies and organizations to bring everybody together to solve problems that face our community in the areas of income, stability, education, and health.
Yeah. And if people want to know more about that program as well, as far as feeding hungry people during the summer months, feeding hungry children during
connect
the summer months.
Connect with us, and we'll get them connected to the group that's meeting once a month and holding conversation. And
Great. And let's say somebody doesn't want to send you an email. They want to actually talk to you. What's the number?
463-5530. I'll be glad to talk for as long as anybody's willing to listen.
All right. And then one last question, and then we have a topic. We're really talking generally right now, but we have a specific topic for today. You mentioned the fall campaign. Can you speak to us a little bit about what that entails?
Each year, United Way, across the nation, across the world, in fact, now, organizes and does a fundraising program for nonprofit partner agencies for United Way, and basically work with employers to conduct workplace campaigns at places of employment, encourage people to make small contributions each week or each pay period. If I walk into a room and ask people to write a check for $260, everybody clutches their pen, their chest, and their checkbook sort of simultaneously and go, ooh, I can't do that. That's not in the budget. But if I ask each of you to put $5 a week on the table, at the end of the year, we're at $260. So it's a very easy way to make a small contribution to support the work that goes on in our community to solve some of the issues that each of our communities faces. And so it's an opportunity to participate in philanthropy and to change the outcomes of some of the issues facing our communities.
Okay. And then once again, if you're listening and you think it's a great opportunity to donate some money to a cause that all the income goes back into our communities,
none of it leaves. It's all staying right here.
To Haines. Okay. So, and you happen not to be in the workplace, but you'd like to donate, I think their organization might still take your donation.
We'll still figure out a way to help you make it. We just had a lady call and said, I just retired, and I realized that I'm not making my bi-monthly contribution via my payroll deduction, so here's my credit card, and just set it up to run, and when the credit card expires, call me, and I'll give you the new expiration, and we'll run it that way. So
just like how you pay for your internet, or like many people do that
automatic deduction. So it really is very easy to do, and it really is very palatable, I guess, in the budgetary processes to make a little contribution multiple times as opposed to one big one. And we have 30,000+ employed individuals across Southeast, and if we could convince each of them to put $5 a week on the table, we'd have $10 million to put to the good of the order.
We'd see some effective change then, that's for sure.
Certainly make a dent in some of the issues. So.
Okay. So let's talk about, you have these community impact grants. So the money comes into United Way, and some of it stays with United Way, some of it goes to the partner agencies, and some of it goes to these community impact grants. That there's $15,000 on the table, and nonprofits can apply to use some of these funds, apply for some of these funds in the areas of education, income, stability, and health. Is that correct? Okay. What's the deadline? How do people go about it?
Deadline is July 18th. If you go to our website, there is a link there with all of the information. We recognize that they're fairly small grants, so the application is appropriately sized for the amount of money. I'm always fascinated by grant processes that require a thesis to be written, and
For
$2,500. So, we're trying to make this as easy as possible. If you're in the social service business and you have a specific project that fits within the parameters of what we're looking for in the areas of education, health, or income stability, we'd encourage applications. It's a fairly simple grant application, just a couple of pages with a little bit of narrative and a very small budget. We provide the budget form for you, so all you got to do is plug in the numbers and it'll add it up for you all by its automatic Excel self.
And yes, and this is for organizations from Haines to Ketchikan.
Correct.
And in a specific area, which of course you'd have to look at the criteria to see if your idea fits into that. But it's also project specific. So
it's meant to be a project, not for ongoing operational expenses.
Okay, so last year there was an early literacy.
We provided some support to the JAM music program. We funded hunger health program for the Ketchikan Youth Initiative. They were working with a group on Prince of Wales Island. The Alaska AIDS Association with their syringe access program, syringe exchange. The WISH program in Ketchikan with their family preservation and unification project. A big big need, small grants, unfortunately. But if the campaign is successful and we raise more money, then we've got more money to put into the process.
Exactly. All right, so that deadline is July 18th. Everything is on the website. Just go on and search
UnitedWaySeak.org.
There you go.
Give us a call, 463-5530.
Great. Thank you, Wayne, for dropping by.
Thank you, Joan.
And thank you, Wayne, for all you do.
And thank you for all your help.
Anytime.
Thank you, Jeff.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 7th of July, 2014. It was on this date, 1928, sliced bread was sold for the first time. A man named Otto Frederick Rowetter, a jeweler from Davenport, Iowa, had invented a bread slicer. He tried to sell it to bakeries. They scoffed. They told him pre-sliced bread would get stale and dry too soon. Finally, he found a baker in Chillicothe, Missouri, named Frank Bench, who agreed to try the bread slicer. And he put ads in the daily paper, the greatest forward step in the baking industry since bread was wrapped, sliced, clean-made bread, and sales went through the roof. And we got the saying, the greatest thing since sliced bread. It's the birthday of historian David McCullough, born Pittsburgh, 1933, went to Yale, studied literature, went to work for Time Life, Sports Illustrated, other magazines, went to work for the U.S. Information Agency, and one day was in the Library of Congress looking for photographs when he came across some photographs of the Johnstown flood of 1889, which he'd heard about, but he didn't know anything about it, and he decided to write a book about it. And every night, after his kids went to bed, he went upstairs and wrote 4 pages every night. The book came out in 1968. It sold very well. He went on to write about the Brooklyn Bridge and about the Panama Canal, Harry Truman, Teddy Roosevelt, John Adams, the founding of the United States, and Americans in Paris. It's the birthday of the science fiction writer Robert A. Heinlein, born in Butler, Missouri, 1907, studied physics, mathematics at UCLA. His novel Stranger in a Strange Land, published in 1961, became a cult classic. It was on this day 200 years ago the novel Waverley by Sir Walter Scott was published, but anonymously, Scott said later, because he feared he would hurt his literary reputation by being classed as a writer of novels. It's the birthday of Gustav Mahler, the composer, born in Bohemia, what is now the Czech Republic, in 1860. And the birthday of Marc Chagall, born in Vitebsk, Russia, 1887, one of 9 kids in a family of modest means. Nonetheless, he got into art school in St. Petersburg and then went off to Paris, where, even though he was homesick and he couldn't speak French, he later said, "My art needed Paris like a tree needs water." Marc Chagall, known for his bright colors and his images from Jewish folklore of ghosts and weddings and fiddlers and fish and a couple floating in the sky. Here's a poem for today by Paul Hostofsky, Poem on the Fridge. The refrigerator is the highest honor a poem can aspire to, the ultimate publication, as close to food as words can come. And this refrigerator poem is honored to be here beneath its own refrigerator magnet, which feels like a medal pinned to its lapel. Stop here a moment and listen to the poem humming to itself, like a refrigerator itself, the song in its head full of crisp, perishable notes that wither in air, the words to the song lined up here like a dispensary full of indispensable details, a jar of corrugated green pickles, an array of headless shrimp, fiery maraschino cherries, a fruit salad, veggie platter, assortments of cheeses and chilled French wines, a pink bottle of amoxicillin. The poem is infectious, it's having a party, the music, the revelry is seeping through this white door. Poem on the Fridge by Paul Hastowski, from his selected poems published by Future Cycle Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity.com, a brain training program designed by neuroscientists that has been used by 50 million people worldwide. More at Lumosity.com. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
A Lutheran and a Jew walk into a radio station. No, it's not the beginning of a joke, but the beginning of a conversation about religion, spirituality, faith, and doubt from the perspectives of religious leaders of different faiths. Join me, Sue Belita, pastor of Resurrection Lutheran Church, and Rabbi Dov Gartenberg this Monday evening at 7 for the debut of One Lutheran, One Jew, One Hour. All who have ears, listen.
Hello and welcome back to Juno Afternoon. It's 3:21 p.m. You are listening live on KTOO News to your local show, Juno Afternoon, and we are here with Keith Karpstein. He is a representative of the Department of Transportation to talk about a very local issue. It is about the Mendenhall Loop Rope Improvement Project, which is from Nancy Street to the back loop. It's been in process for a little bit. They've had some initial input from the public. And now, tomorrow night, not now, but tomorrow night, Tuesday, July 8th, from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at the Thunder Mountain High School Commons, there is going to be an informal open house to look at the drawings. There's two alternatives on the table, and then a presentation about these alternatives, and then a question and answer. So, Keith, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much, Joan.
Okay, so tomorrow night, people could go and look at these options that are on the table, but each option has many different components to it.
Correct.
Is that correct?
Yeah. Let me get into what we presented back in November of 2013. So what we presented then was essentially widening concepts, and we looked at three alternatives. The first alternative looked at widening the road beginning at Nancy Street and continuing up to Stephen Richards, and that's where the widening would end there. We did have a transition or additional widening to a three-lane section, so two travel lanes and a center turn lane, that started up at the Mendenhall and Valley Boulevard intersection and continued to Back Loop Road. So that section, what I just talked about there, that three-lane section, is included in all alternatives. But the second alternative looked at extending that five-lane section up to Floyd Dryden. And then a third alternative looked at extending that five-lane section all the way up to Mendenhall and Valley Boulevard. So we presented those three alternatives. We took public comments. As a result of those comments, we've developed a new set of alternatives that focuses on intersection improvements. So mainly three intersections in particular, the Stephen Richards intersection, Floyd Dryden intersection, as well as the Mendenhall and Valley intersection. So the new set of alternatives we're looking at are focused at the intersections. They do include a possibility of just widening and signal improvements at Stephen Richards. We've also got another alternative that looks at a roundabout at Stephen Richards. And then the next two alternatives are roundabout at Stephen Richards, plus one at Floyd Dryden, and then a third alternative would be a roundabout at Stephen Richards, Floyd Dryden, and then at Mendenhall and Valley Boulevard.
Okay. So the tomorrow night, there's the informal open house, look at the drawings from 5:30 to 6 at Thunder Mountain High School, and then the presentation, and then a Q&A discussion.
Yep.
So is this also public comment? Like, should people come to see what it is and voice what they like and what they don't like?
Exactly. We'll have comment forms available for the public to use and submit. We also do have a project website, although it doesn't include the new set of alternatives. We're hoping to get that up this week. So if you're not able to get to the meeting, we'll have that website available, and you can also submit comments directly from the website.
And how would people find that website?
They can go to our DOT homepage, and that is www.dot.alaska.gov. And then at the bottom of that page, you just click on the Southeast region, and that'll take you up to a list of projects, and you'll find the Mendenhall Loop Road Capacity Improvement Project at that
Okay, so that's the name of it, and that's Nancy Street and Back Loop. Now, that's a very congested area. So during when school is starting and ending, between Glacier Valley, Floyd Dryden, people going to work. I lived out in that area. I don't now, but I did off the back loop. It's a very congested area at peak traffic hours.
Yes, and we recognize that. And that's what we're trying to address is improving vehicle capacity, but at the same time, improving facilities for pedestrians and bicyclists.
Okay.
So we're looking at all users of the facility.
And then this is on topic, but a little bit off topic.
Uh-huh.
What are the benefits? Keith is a DOT engineer. Okay. What are the benefits, pros and cons of a roundabout or a traffic light?
Well, we've found that roundabouts actually are more functional than a signal. They've proven to improve vehicle capacity as well as reducing vehicle accidents, and in particular, injury accidents, because they are traffic calming devices. So they slow traffic down, just from what we've found, they're the way to go.
Okay, and as far as cost, are roundabouts, I would imagine they're more expensive than, I guess you have to look at long range if it actually decreases accidents.
It's really hard to put a number to it, whether it's, more expensive or cheaper than a signal improvement project, but there certainly are more impacts due to the size of a roundabout. So there might be more right-of-way acquisition costs, things of that nature. As far as project costs, they're not any more expensive than a signal improvement project.
Okay, well, I was just curious because I know we're putting in a roundabout out by the Auk Bay Harbor.
Correct.
That's been happening for a while.
We expect that to be complete very soon.
Okay, so here we are tomorrow, once again, this last time I'm plugging it, it's tomorrow, 5:30 to 7:30 at Thunder Mountain High School. Tomorrow's Tuesday, 5:30 to 7:30, the discussion and question and answer is at 6:30, and the presentation is at 6, and access to the drawing starts at 5:30. And you'll have DOT representatives there and their consulting firm, and all hands on deck as far as being involved with this project. So if you have questions, this is one of the times to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So then you're going to take this information, then you're going, the process will involve coming up with the definitive idea. And then when will the, common John and Jane actually see the improvements start to happen, do you think?
Yeah, so what we'll do after tomorrow night's meeting is we do have a short comment period. I believe we're accepting comments till July 22nd. Based on those comments, we'll look at the previous comments and try to come up with the best alternative that's going to basically fit everybody's needs. And once we get that figured out, we will start the design process. And part of that process is doing the preliminary engineering. So we'll have some concept drawings and we'll do a public scoping, most likely another public meeting, presenting the selected alternative to seek more comments that are specific to that alternative.
And so when do you think
We expect to, by the end of this summer, we'll know which alternative we're going to go with. Probably late this year or early next year, we could expect to do another public meeting to talk about the selected alternative.
Okay. All right. And then you said public comments. So there's the opportunity to go tomorrow to Thunder Mountain High School. There's
correct.
The opportunity to go to the DOT website and look for the Mendenhall Loop Road improvements under the southeast section. And is there a number for somebody to call if they want to just talk to somebody?
Sure. Actually, I'm the point of contact for the project. I can be reached at 465-1796, and I'd be happy to chat with anybody about the project.
Sounds great. All right, thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you, Joan.
On the road again. I just can't wait to get on the road again. The life I love is making music with my friends. I can't wait to get on the road again. That I've never been, seeing things that I may never see again. I can't wait to get on the road again, everybody said. On the road again, I stand the chips as we go down the highway. We're the best of friends. It's the sin that the world keeps turning out. Making music with my friends. I can't wait to get on the road again.
Hello and welcome back to Juno Afternoon. It's 3:32 p.m. in Alaska's capital city. You're listening to us live on KTOO here one more time in Juno. Jeff Brown's the producer and engineer of the show. I'm Joan Pardis, your Monday host, and we have two representatives of Ha'ani who is here. They are here to talk about the Oyster Fest, the third annual Oyster Fest that will happen July 19th. So it's Elle Kasbaum and Caleb Pittman. Hello, how are you?
Doing good. How are you?
Doing great.
Good. So let's talk a little bit about Ha'ani, and then let's talk about Oyster Fest.
All right.
Yeah.
So Ha'ani is the economic development subsidiary of Sea Alaska. We have a community development fund as well, and they are a not-for-profit, and they also host a competition called Path to Prosperity, and as well as Cufflinks and Pearls.
Okay, that sounds great. Yes, we interviewed some people about the Path to Prosperity, and that sounds like a great ongoing program. And this is your third annual Oyster Fest. It's going to be at Sea Alaska at the Sea Alaska Plaza on the 19th. And tell me about it. I haven't gone to one, so what's it like?
So this year we're hosting it on the lanai, so right under the building there. And we have a couple of restaurants like Flight Deck, the Baranoff Hotel will be there, Saffron, TK's, and they will be serving sauces and mignonettes. And we will also have a beer garden hosted by Alaskan Brewing. And basically, people can come and buy oysters and serve up sauces, salts, whatever they want. And we will also be serving other foods, such as like reindeer corn dogs, and we will have fried and frozen there as well. So it's a really great opportunity for people to get out and enjoy some great Alaskan oysters.
It sounds great, and that's from 5 to 8. And you're also bringing up a celebrity chef. Is that true?
It's actually from 2 to 8.
There is an
all-you-can-eat option from 5 to 8. Though.
Oh, sorry about that. Yeah. It's from 2 to 8. And then you're going to have a DJ. It's not just a bouncy house, face painting. It's just a whole big party.
Yeah, bring the whole family.
Sounds great. And who's the celebrity chef who's coming up?
So Marty Duncan was a Food Network star finalist for season 8, and she's hosted Oyster Fests before, so we thought it'd be a great idea to get someone who had some experience with it, and just to make it more fun and bring some more people in and get people involved.
Sounds great. And what kind of, I see there's some kind of raffles going on, too. What kind of raffles?
Yeah, we're not 100% sure on those yet, but there will be raffles. So.
Okay, sounds great. And it goes from 2 to 8, and the event is free, but if you purchase food, there's...
Half dozen is $12, 20 dozen oysters, a dozen is $20, and the all-you-can-eat is $69, and that option goes from 5 to 8.
That sounds great. All right. It sounds like quite the party. Anything else you guys want to add about it?
No, we're just trying to really do it up bigger this year, and that's why we're bringing in a professional chef. She's an actual oyster chef, and we're trying to make a family focus. That's why we're bringing in the bouncy house and the chalk writing and all this stuff. And we're hoping to do it to raise awareness for the Alaska-grown oyster, because a lot of people don't know about how great an Alaskan-grown oyster is and how it's great for our economy here. And at Ha'ani, that's what we're all about. Is our mission and purpose is to try and build local economies. And this is a great way to fulfill our purpose and have a lot of fun and bring out the family.
Okay, so the oysters that are available at the Oyster Fest, they're Southeast oysters?
They are.
Okay. And are there farms, right? Like there are oyster farms.
Yeah.
And how many oyster farms are in Southeast, just like a round number?
There's only a handful of farms. At this event, I believe we're going to be representing two different farms. We're still trying to confirm our oyster purchases from them. It's kind of a crazy time for the farmers right now, and they're in the middle of harvesting and kind of like gearing up, trying to get their seed ready for the next year as well. So.
That sounds great. And then do you guys need volunteers for this?
Yeah, we're still looking for volunteers to come in and help out. They can feel free to get in contact with me if they're interested. My phone number is 262-490-1572. And there are different shifts they can take on if they're not available all day. But if they want to get involved, it'd be a great way to get to know the oysters.
Okay, great. And then if people can't remember that number, can they find this online somewhere, or is there an email address?
My email is lkasbaum@cealaska.com, and that is spelled ELLE.KASBOHM@CEALASKA.com.
Right, or they could probably also call Sea Alaska and get in touch with
you,
and that's L. Or Caleb. So, sounds great. All right, July 19th, 2 to 8 o'clock. Sounds like a party at the Sea Alaska Plaza. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
This is Bird Note. Cornell Lab of Ornithology maintains the largest collection of bird sounds in the world. Let's listen as Arthur Allen, the lab's founder, narrates, in 1958, an evening in Sapsucker Woods.
There is a charming spot in the Finger Lakes country of central New York that we know as Sapsucker Woods. Friends have given it to Cornell University to be set aside in perpetuity as a bird sanctuary. At its northern border is a woodsy pond where the waterfowl vie with the frogs and toads to make the nights musical and interesting. We call it Sapsucker Woods because here the yellow-bellied sapsucker finds a place sufficiently cool to satisfy its Canadian urge and sound its irregular Morse code and rear its young south of its normal range. We now invite you to sit with us as the shadows lengthen and listen to the changing calls of the wild. The scarlet tanager is the first to greet us from a nearby pine, singing like a robin in a hurry with a cold. Hurry, worry, flurry, blurry. Now the descending spirals of the veery. Across the road, over the open field, a bobolink sings his last song of the evening. And then gives over to the vesper sparrow that does his finest singing in the twilight.
Enjoy the rest of the story and learn more about the lab at birdnote.org.
The clinic is closed and you or a loved one don't feel well, or you have a health-related question that can't wait. What do? Here's the solution. Starting July 1st, Search will have a free after-hours nurse triage line for our patients in Juneau. Search's free after-hours service is available by calling 1-800-613-0560. For life-threatening emergencies, please call 911.
This message brought to you by Search, your partner in health.
Hello and welcome back to Juneau Afternoon. It's 3:40 p.m. Our next guests are Terry Tibbett and Dr. George Brown. They're here to talk about the organization Juneau Votes and getting the vote out for the primary election and the other things that are on the ballot come August. Welcome, both of you. Nice to see you here. So let's start at the very beginning. Juneau Votes, what is it?
We learned in the last election that we had a very low voter turnout. I'm a member of the League of Women Voters, and we've been working on this for a long time. And we've met with assembly members, and they kept saying, let's do this together. And then we found a very important ally in Robert Barr, who is the new, I've forgotten his title, head of the Juneau Public Option System. They're just as concerned about the low voter turnout, too. So they got together maybe 6 weeks, 2 months ago, and said, let's form an organization and get everybody in this town that we can to join it. And it's called Juneau Votes. And those of you who happened to observe the parade on July the 4th, we had hoped to be together, but we didn't manage to do this. And I was marching with the League of Women Voters, and I kept looking at people saying, vote, but think first. That's our mantra. But for further back, there was also a banner and people from Juneau Votes, and they were handing out little flyers. We did some of this, too. They had high school students handing out flowers, telling people about the things that are going to be happening in this year. And Terry can go over some of that, but I will go into detail about particularly the first one on August the 19th.
Okay, but before we get into the issues on hand, how do you round up voters? How do you get people to register? What's the process? Do you need help? Do you have volunteers? I mean, what's the outreach program like for Juneau Votes?
Well, so the host of people who belong to Juneau Votes are also voter registrars. It's pretty easy to do. If you contact the Division of Elections, you can become one fairly easily. So Juneau Votes members, volunteers, are participating in a variety of public events like the 4th of July parade to set up a table and offer people the opportunity to register to vote. So besides registering to vote with one of the members of our group that will be out and about, there's lots and lots of registrars in lots of different groups, so we're not the only one out there doing it. But if a person wants to know more and they don't run into a person, they can go to the elections website, which is www.elections.alaska.gov, or just easily just Google Division of Elections
Alaska.
Mm-hmm. And there's a couple of Juneau Votes has a Facebook page, so you can get there by that way too. Just go in and do a search for Juneau Votes and you can find it. One thing I want to mention, that Juneau Votes is a nonpartisan collaborative project. That's it's a coalition of community organizations and individual members of the community, completely nonpartisan, not interested in what the issues are as much as just making sure people
get out. So you don't care what people vote, how people vote, you just want them to vote.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
It's really important. So that was my attempt at making a joke, but I didn't really wasn't funny, but that is the idea of that we all need to get out and vote. And if you're 18 or older, you're eligible to vote, and you should use this right to vote. And we have a lot of things on the ballot come August. And when is the election? When is the voting day?
Well, the primary election is August 19th, and there's a ballot measure on there. And there's also, of course, you if you're a member of a party, you vote for the person that you would like to represent your party in the general election. So the primary election is August 19th, and then the municipal election is August 7th. That's just for local issues that pertain to Juneau. And then the general election, which is the national election, that happens on November 4th. So we're doing a lot of driving right now to get people to sign up between now and I forget what the deadline is before, but I'm not going to speak.
Exactly. Okay, but there is a deadline.
There is
you
a deadline for registering.
You can't skate right up to the August 7th municipal election and be able to vote. There is a deadline, probably the end of the month, one would imagine. So, okay, so there's Juneau Votes on Facebook. There's you could search online for Division of Elections Juneau, and is there a number that people could call?
There is. It's 888-383-8683, and that's how to find your polling place. If you go to the Division of Elections website, too, you can also type in your address, and you can find out what precinct you live in, who your legislators are, who your municipal leaders are. There's ways to find that out, too.
Okay. Well, the municipal election is on the 7th. I'm sure on Juneau afternoon we'll have some information about that, as well as the primary election on the 19th. But that primary election on the 19th, which is August 19th, is also about this Senate Bill 21, whether to repeal or retain it. So, Dr. Brown, can you talk a little bit about Senate Bill 21 and what it's asking people to either repeal or retain?
Well, first of all, we want to get as many people in Juneau to come next Monday to the Mendenhall Public Library at 6 o'clock, because there will be a panel discussion. There were two people are in favor of Ballot Measure 1, which would repeal Senate Bill 21, and two people are going to vote to say no. And we've all seen signs. They were in the parade. It's a complicated issue, but it's an issue when we have a chance to give our input about it, and these people are well-informed, and that's what I meant when I said our mantra is vote, but think first. We do care that people are informed before they vote.
Absolutely.
The League of Women Voters is very dedicated to that. How they vote is entirely up to them. Now, this will be held physically at the Mendenhall Public Library, but the public library system has some fancy internet technology called OWL, and so in the downtown public library and the Douglas Public Library at the same time, people can go and see and hear the same thing on big TV screens. And so if you live in the Valley, go to Mendenhall. If you live in Douglas, go to Douglas. If you live in Juneau, come to downtown. But I want to add this. I'm a very patriotic person, and maybe a lot of you watched the July the 4th special musical from the National Capitol on July the 4th. And what really struck me was the words when the people sang God Bless America. And the words were, "And crown thy good with brotherhood." We all know that we live in very contentious times. And this issue about Ballot Measure 1 is one of those contentious times. And what we want to say, and that's what that song said so well, if we learn to respect, and our governor is telling us to do this all the time, it's a very hard thing to do. If we learn to respect the point of view of those we perceive as being against us, that is practicing informed democracy. And it takes away the idea of having enemies and even worse things. And this is what the League keeps promoting. I like to remind people that it took 7 decades plus for women to get the right to vote in this country. That was a major change in the very structure of our democracy. They've had that right for 94 years, and we want people to go out and to exercise that right, because that's when we determine the future of this country. We determine our leaders, and we vote on those issues. So come on next Monday, the 14th, to those places at 6 p.m. and hear this great debate.
Great. So I'm just going to fill in some information that was really well said. So next Monday, July 14th, okay, it's not Election Day. It is a discussion, okay, and it starts at the it's live at the Mendenhall Valley Library, but it's going to be broadcast live at both the Douglas and Downtown Libraries. From 5 to 6 is the panel discussion, and I'll talk about the panel in a minute, and 6 to 7 is the question and answer with the public. So Senate Bill 21 is the act relating to the oil and gas production tax, interest rates, on overdue taxes and tax credits. So this is going to be a panel of four experts: Bill Corbis, who works for AELNP, Les Guerra, Representative Guerra from the Alaska House of Representatives, Jim Clark, former Chief of Staff for Governor Murkowski, and Lisa Weisler, who's an oil, gas, and mining expert and owner of Changing Tides Consulting. It's going to be moderated by Frank Amaduri. He's the owner and publisher of the Alaska Budget Report. And so this is going to be a lively debate about what are the pros and cons of retaining or repealing this highly publicized act about the oil tax, okay? So if all of us may have perceptions about what it is or isn't, I think it's a good idea for us to all get as much information as possible before we vote. This panel is comprised of both pro to retain and con to retain, or to repeal, however you want to put it. So this is a wonderful opportunity, and you could check it out at Douglas and Downtown Public Library. The vote does go in front of voters on August 19th for the primary. It's kind of in there with all the people that you're going to vote for. So regardless of when you go, what party in Alaska where you have an interesting primary system that you vote only for your party, but this bill will be on everyone's ballot, no matter whether you're a Republican, a Democrat, Independent, Green Party. And if I missed anybody else, I'm sorry. So thank you all for what you're doing, Juno Votes, and trying to get the public educated as much as possible about these very contentious and complex bills. I don't think there is one easy answer. And also what Dr. Brown was saying, what I heard was, you know, here in America, we have the right to vote. And it's important regardless if we agree with our neighbors, our colleagues, our friends, our family. It goes on and on, our spouses. I've known spouses that one was a diehard Republican, one was a diehard Democrat. It's all very interesting. But the point is that here in America, we all have a right to vote the way we believe. And it's important, even if you disagree with someone, to try to understand their thinking so it could widen your view, okay, and create empathy instead of pulling us all apart. We're all in this and together, and regardless if you agree with somebody or not, they're probably operating from they think this is the best idea. I don't think people wake up and say, ooh, you know, I'm going to vote on a...
Well, in addition, going to become informed like this helps us to judge so many advertisements, and we know that problem. I won't go into that. I just also want to add that Juno Votes, this new coalition, is going to continue to have other spots here, other meetings, other organizations. You'll hear a lot about us because we want to get the turnout in Juneau much higher than 19% as it was in the last election. And thank you so much for this time.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you, Dr. Brown. What Terry's hopping in her seat. She's got something to add.
I just want to say one last thing before I forget. I work with the Alaska Mental Health Board and the Advisory Board on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse. And one of our roles in the coalition in Juno Votes is to help people with disabilities have access to voting. And we have there's a whole lot of provisions for people who may not be able to get to the polls, who need somebody to come for them to help them get a ballot to actually even take the ballot to the voting place for them, and also
for an absentee ballot.
Yeah, absentee. Mm-hmm. There's a volunteer organization that'll be going around, and actually you can call and have people help you get your ballot. So there's a bunch of reasons why people, even with disabilities who may not be able to get out, can still vote. And I want to give them my phone number at work so they can call me if they have questions about how. It's 907-465-4765, and I'll be glad to answer any questions about helping people with disabilities vote.
Okay, and then back to Juno Votes. Okay, this by partisan coalition. They're not concerned about the outcome. Everyone's concerned with the outcome, but they're not concerned about who you vote for. They want you to be registered. So there's a Facebook page, Juno Votes. If you need more information about Division of Elections, you could just search that on any internet accessible device you have. And the number is, Terry?
888-383-8683.
Okay, so if you want to help, if you want to get yourself registered, or if you want to help get out the vote, those are the contact information that you need.
The League has a website.
League of Women Voters.
League of Women Voters, Juno.org.
Are obviously not all women, because Dr. Brown
of course not.
Is a member.
You know, back when women first met to start this process, there were a couple of dozen men. I like to think of them as intelligent males, okay? And we are more intelligent than we give ourselves credit for. Anyway, the League of Women Voters National has a system called Vote 411, and you can access that through our website if you want to get wherever you live, the precincts where to vote in every state. And the Division of Elections is developing that same capability and may be already done, so that everybody can certainly learn how to register and know where to go to vote. And we want to make sure they do.
That's great. Well, thank you for all you do. We're going to take a short break and listen to Elephant Revival. They'll be playing at the 2014 Southeast Alaska State Fair in Haines.
Loving you, it runs so deep. Upon the surface, here I sleep. Walk in the dark and light. Walking all the day and night. Rivers fall, the ocean sigh. Fall for you here every time. Like a bead of the flower or bud. Does a flower question love?
Hello, thank you for listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO News. Tomorrow, Ken Fix has a great show. You should tune in at 3 o'clock every day. And tonight, don't forget, new show tonight at 7, KTOO News, the premiere of a new series, One Jew, One Lutheran, 1 hour. Let's all listen and see if an hour is enough. Anyway, the weather tonight is rain, lows around 54. Tomorrow, rain, highs around 60. Tuesday night is showers, southeast wind 10 miles per hour, shifting to the southwest late. Wednesday rain, Wednesday night cloudy, Thursday and Thursday night mostly cloudy. We were just listening to Elephant Revival. They're playing at the Haines Fair, which is at the end of the month. If you want to listen to Juno Afternoon or any other KTOO program, you could do it online at your leisure at ktoo.org. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. I'm Joan Partis. I am the Monday host, and thank you for listening. Next thing, all things considered.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We rebroadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269 AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K201 AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable, on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
Attention Alaska gardeners. Invasive weeds are a threat to landscaping, lawns, and gardens. They can spread and harm Alaska wildlife and waterways. Potted plants, hay...